More Music Radio Pod. We're still kind of on time, though. I mean, we're going to start right now. We have Dave Travis in studio, and he's talking on the phone right now. We're ordering some hookers to come down. And, no, just kidding. I'm just loading in a couple songs. The show's going to start in a little bit, and we'll be back on. Talk to Nick for a second. Here, Nick, tell him what's up.
All right, we got a punk rock guy in the studio tonight, Dave Travis, if I'm not mistaken, is his name. And he does, he's been doing documentaries and archiving footage and interviewing punk rock bands in the Los Angeles area for the past 30 years. So we're about to learn some LA punk rock history for the next 2 hours or so, and it should be really interesting and a really good time. So we're going to be getting to that shortly, and so just hang tight, and we'll be getting started in any moment now. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, man. Hey, welcome back, man.
Hey, how's it going, dude? Good?
It's going all right. Yeah, I like it.
Good, man. Mm-hmm. Good. Good stuff, dude.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
How about you?
Me too, dude. Always, man. Always a pleasure coming into the studio to work.
Yeah, man. I'm really excited. Hey, Dave, push that red button right there. This is like some pregame shit right now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that button turns red when you push it. Yeah, push that one. Yeah. Turn on mic. What is that?
Four.
All right.
Hello?
Okay. That's Dave Travis right there. What's going on, Dave? How you doing, man?
Pretty good, Vince. Thanks for having me up here.
We're just loading in some songs right now. You know, We got some stuff from The Gears, Saccharine Trust that we're going to play, Mike Watt and the Missing Men, right?
Yeah.
And let's see, we
you
have
need
some
one more.
Some Carnage Asada? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking for one more, so let's see here. This is really cool behind-the-scenes stuff, man. What do you think, man? It's cutting edge. Like, this radio show is cutting edge.
Here we go.
Which one is that one?
That's the eyes. You know about the eyes?
The eyes? No.
I was working on the Red Cross video. The Eyes was a band with Charlotte Caffey and DJ Bonebreak before X and before the Go-Go's.
You know, man, you're going to help me out because, like, I'm, like, really, like, I don't know anything that's cool, you know? And, like, and that's why I'm excited to have you in is because, like, you this is church tonight, Nick. We're going to learn some stuff,
man. I'm looking forward to this,
church,
dude.
Where's the Pope?
Yeah, where's the Pope at, man? He always has some really good weed, man. Every time I meet up with the Pope, there's this guy, Nick. His name is the Pope. The reason why they call him the Pope, and I mean, Dave, you've known him for, I mean, much longer than I have, but the reason why they call him the Pope is because he's the Pope of dope, right?
Yeah, but he's also the Pope of North Hollywood.
He is? That's funny, man. Dave plays in Carnage Asada. We're going to hear some Carnage Asada tonight.
Yes, we are. And other things, too.
You're my favorite cellist, actually.
Can you name another?
Yo-Yo Ma.
There you go. I'm Yo Mama.
Hey, that's good. That's a good one right there.
I pulled that out of my ass, man. I don't know, man. So on this one, man, the one that you were telling me about.
Oh, that, because I just came down here. I was working on a Red Cross video. Mm-hmm. And then Jeff McDonald's wife is Charlotte from the Go-Go's.
Mm-hmm.
But before she was in the Go-Go's, she was in a band called The Eyes.
Oh, okay. What song are we going to hear off of them?
Let's hear, how about Take a Quaalude Now, which is number 2.
Take a Quaalude Now. Let's see here. Oh, okay.
This is a live recording from the Elks Lodge in 1978.
Oh, shit.
It's a benefit for the mask.
Yeah, man. We're about to get started on this shit. I mean, it's good to get here on time, you know, but even though, I mean, we still, because it's all automated, and so it starts right at 10 o'clock. And, you know, we are kind of on time. I mean, I'm usually like maybe 5 or 10 minutes late. So it's actually kind of cool that I made it. What do you think, Nick?
Yeah, dude, you did make it pretty much right on time. That's it's going to be a good show, dude.
Cool, man. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too.
All right, let's see here. Why don't we get this shit started? I think I can get this shit started now. All right. I hate dead air. Yeah. Have you ever done a radio show before? Like,
I've been on the radio, but I've never had my own radio show.
It's cool, man.
But I do got UHF.TV.
That's right.
www.UHF.TV, but we're not live on the air. We're pre-recorded on there.
Cool. How long has it, I'm going to ask you about this when the show starts, but I mean, how long have you been doing that?
Yeah. I guess I don't need to talk to you.
We've kind of started. This is actually starting.
I saw the red light that said recording, so I thought it was recording.
What do you think of the place, man?
I like it. This is really good, Nick.
Originally, it started over at Jeremy's the owner and founder of Skid Row Studios, and he's actually in New York City right now. And so it's just been us. Like, Nick has been like running the More Music Radio Pod, and he does a bunch of other shows on Skid Row Studios.
Yep.
Have you heard any of the other shows on Skid Row Studios?
Not that much. I've just been concentrating on the More Music Radio show. Oh, I guess we're not on the air, so I don't.
No, we're on the air.
Okay, yeah, I've been only listening to the More Music Radio show.
If anybody wants to call in, they could call 1-800-893-9562. All right, let me see if I can get this shit started. Okay, Nick, why don't we start the show, man? What do you think?
Let's do it, dude.
All right, cool.
Okay.
Let's push these red buttons here, and we will start the show in just a second here. Listen to this thing.
Yes.
A Connecticut woman has been arrested for domestic violence after allegedly handcuffing herself to her husband and repeatedly biting him. The estranged couple, Robert Drawbow and Helen's son, were attempting to talk things out. Drawbow says he fell asleep and awoke to find his wife had handcuffed him to her. Son claims it was the only way to get him to talk. Drawbow can be heard on a 911 call he placed screaming for help.
My wife has handcuffed me. I need assistance right away.
What happened?
My wife has handcuffed me.
Okay, she's
attacking me. She's handcuffed me. Pair of handcuffs.
Okay.
She's handcuffed me. She's attacking me. I have not done anything to hurt her. She has a record of violence. Please come and help me get out of here.
Okay, where is she now?
I'm holding her down so I can call you.
Is there any way that you can lock yourself in another room?
No, she's handcuffed herself to me. Please send police.
Okay, is she hurting you, sir? Do you need an ambulance?
No, I don't need an ambulance. I need police. 833 Constance Hill Road, Fairfield, Connecticut.
I got that already, sir. What's her name?
Helen's son. She has a history of violence. Please.
Is there any drinking involved?
No.
Any drunk?
No.
And your name, sir?
My name is Robert Jaba.
Are there any weapons in the house?
I don't know. Knives and such. I don't know what she got before she handcuffed me. There could be nothing. Ow! Ow!
What is she doing now, sir?
Yeah, she's sticking her head. Ow! She's bothering me! Are they almost here? I can't get to the door to open it.
Okay, is it locked?
The door's locked.
Okay. So they're going to have to break in?
Yes.
What started this, sir? Do you know? What started? Why did she do this?
Because I divorced her and started leaving her. And, ow! I'm just trying to use every hand to keep her away from me.
No pillows?
I need help.
Okay, they've been on the way, sir, since you first gave me the address. I'm just trying to keep you on the phone to make sure that everything's okay. Does she have any knives or anything that she can grab or anything?
I don't know what she has. 833
Punk Sale Road. I know, sir. I already have the address. They've been on the way for a couple minutes now.
Thank you. I'm so sorry.
She just came out of nowhere and handcuffed you?
Yeah, when I woke up.
Where in the house are you?
Oh, in the back bedroom.
Back bedroom?
Yeah, back bedroom.
Drabal was treated for bite marks in the torso and arm area, as well as a laceration to the forehead.
Getting my balls busted by a woman, let me tell you. Really gives Lightning the motherfucking blues. The name of this song is Stop Breaking My Balls.
We'll do it live.
Okay. Broadcasting from downtown Los Angeles.
We'll do it live. Fuck it. It's the More Music Radio Pod.
Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live.
On skidrow.la.
Fucking thing sucks.
What's going on, everybody? It's the More Music Radio Pod on skidrow.la or skidrowstudios.com. All right, welcome to the show. The show finally started. What do you think, man?
Hey.
It sounds cooler with an intro, with a beginning, like with some funny shit. We heard some lady was biting up her husband. Her husband called 911 pleading for help. You know, my wife is biting me, you know. Please help me. And then we heard Lightning Woodcock would stop breaking my balls. That's actually a More Music Radio Pod on location at the Redwood. Yeah. I bootlegged one of Lightning's songs from the Redwood, and I'm playing it right here on the More Music Radio Pod. That's how we do it, you know? Right. Found art, man.
So in Yiddish, there's a term called Balla Busta, which is...
What's that?
Kind of means a ball buster.
Oh, Balabusta. We like Balabusta here on the More Music Radio Pod.
Got our vocabulary lesson for the day.
So we're gonna actually have a big history lesson, right? I mean, you even made a documentary, History Lesson Part 1.
That's right. History Lesson Part 1. It's out available on MVD. It's got Red Cross, Twisted mm-hmm. Roots, Meat Puppets, and the Minutemen.
Mm-hmm. Damn, man. How long is it?
It's 1 hour.
That's actually 1/1000th of the footage that you have, right?
It's less than 1/1000th. But yeah, it's one of those things where it took me, it's 1 hour, but it took like 30 years to do.
Wow. God damn, man. That's fucking awesome. Hey, and you know what? I got to get some beer. Since we were running late, we were kind of running behind. So why don't we catch up and play these songs? Let's see. We're going to hear some Gears right now. Don't Be Afraid to Pogo, followed by Mike Watt. And the Missing
Gears,
Man.
You could see on coming up Saturday the 21st twice. So if you're up in LA, they're playing at the Bloomfest, which we'll be talking about.
That's right.
Very much. And if you're down in the San Pedro, they're playing after that at Harold's Place with Blood on the Saddle in Lawndale. So
awesome, man.
You got two chances to see the gear, so you have no excuse unless you don't live in LA County.
Cool, man. Yeah. And when we come back, we will talk about. Bloomfest and what's going on at Bloomfest, who Joe Bloom was, and we'll talk about the Al's Bar tribute stage, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Mormons played our first show there at Al's Bar. We were kind of latecomers over there because they actually closed down in 2001. We played in 1998, our first show over there, so we're kind of attached to that spot.
Yeah, that was the place, between Al's Bar and T's, that's where...
Right, and Mr. T's Bowl.
That's where like our 90s headquarters were.
Yeah, man. And we played a few shows there at Al's Bar, man. It's an indescribable feeling when you walked in there, you know. It's almost like you're walking into a movie, you know. It's a dive bar, you know. It had that authentic feel to it. The drinks were actually kind of cheap. And I remember sneaking in there when I was, I think I was like 20, 19 or 20. And I snuck in there and they caught me and they threw me out. But, you know, as soon as I was 21, you know, we got to play there.
So. Yeah, I got thrown out of there too when I was not of age. Then Carnage Assault, actually, we had after Dez left, we had another guitar player, Dave Green.
Dez Cadena, right?
Yeah.
Dez Cadena, that's bad, dude. He was in Carnage?
He was in Carnage. And then after that, we had this guy, Dave Green, who after Carnage was in Los Abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
But when he was in Carnage, he was like 19.
Wow.
And then like they had to make him like wait outside until we played. And then... he had to go back outside again, or actually just went home, but they wouldn't let him sit in the Al's Bar.
Yeah, man. They were strict there at Al's Bar, you know, with that rule, you know, but there was a lot of shit going on there, man. You know what? You know, let's take a break. And when we get back, we'll talk more about Bloomfest, about Al's Bar, about Carnage, about History Lesson, and about UHF TV. Cause we're here with Dave Travis on the More Music Radio Pod. We'll be right back.
Okay. May I speak to manager, please? Manager in North. Hey, fuck you. Fuck you, mom. Fuck you, mom. mom, you're a mother, motherfucker, you're a mom, you're a mother, all your family, fuck you, bastard, buddy.
The More Music Radio Pod.
Broadcasting internationally from downtown Los Angeles.
On Skid Row.
Don't be afraid to pogo. Don't be afraid to relate. If it wasn't for this kind of music, you wouldn't have come to this place. Then you go and tell me that punk's not your scene. Instead, you try to tell me that's too late. There's no such thing as time. There's no such thing as hate. Give yourself a good reason why. Try to negotiate. Stop yourself. Keep on saying the right thing. Don't be afraid of pogo. For this kind of music, you wouldn't have come to this place. Then you go and tell me that punk's not your scene. Instead, you try to tell me that's too late. Don't be afraid to pogo. Don't be afraid to pogo. Don't be afraid to pogo.
www.skidrow.la, are you FAA or FCC?
We're DIY.
DIY? What's that mean?
Do it yourself.
Do it yourself.
At the heart is envy.
Mr. T's, if you want to call in at the skidrow.la, it's 1-800-893-9562.
All right, welcome back to the More Music Radio Pod. What's going on? All right. Was that too low, Nick? Were the levels low on that last thing?
On the songs?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the levels seem kind of low, dude, of your tracks.
Jesus. Did you boost them up?
Yeah, I had it up all the way.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, just as long as it sounds all right.
Yeah.
Coming out of your laptop?
Yeah, how embarrassing, huh? Jeez, we're looking so unprofessional here right now. On the
try
to
turn up your headphone off.
Is that better?
Yeah.
That's what it was, dude. All right. High five. All right.
Yeah, it's better now. Now I turned it down up here. I turned it down a little bit more back here, too.
That's one thing I forgot to do. Fuck.
That's not one thing.
There we go.
What the fuck do you want? I'm on fucking Quaaludes right now, you know? All right. Cool. Well, we're here with Dave Travis of Carnage Asada and UHF TV. And we were talking a little bit earlier about the documentary that you did. You have been filming bands since like 1984 or something?
83.
83?
Yeah.
Wow, man. So what got you started into filming bands? Because you were telling me you have over 1,000 hours of live music recorded.
Yeah. What happened was my dad was a cameraman, and he was a news cameraman, and they used to do the news with 16-millimeter film.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, he used to shoot a lot of stuff, like, in Vietnam in the 60s, and, you know, they'd shoot on film,
mm-hmm.
and then they'd have to send the film to Tokyo to be developed,
mm-hmm.
and then they send the developed film from Tokyo to L.A. or New York to be edited.
Wow, how long does that take to get the footage?
It would take like 2 weeks between being shot in Vietnam to being aired in
that's crazy,
the U.S. Because now you just see something, it's live.
Yeah, now it's instant.
Like anywhere in the world's live. Yeah. But back then it was shot on film.
Mm-hmm.
It had to be developed. They had to sync. The sound was on reel-to-reel tape.
Right.
And then, so the news used to be like that. And then the mid-70s, they changed the news to videotape, which mm-hmm. was originally on 3/4-inch videotape. And then, so my dad kind of like different skill set. So at first, you know, they stopped shooting the news on film, but they're still shooting TV on film. So he ended up starting working on shows like the Fantasy Island or Chips.
Oh, cool, yeah.
Like and then.
Dude, I used to love Fantasy Island. I wanted to play with Tattoo when I was a little kid. I used to watch Fantasy Island, and I was like, I want to play with that kid. He seems so fun. He talks cool.
But I don't know. Like my dad, like and his friends, they said he was like a real, just a little cokehead kid. They really loved like Ricardo Montalban. I worked on some movies and stuff with like my dad and his cronies.
Uh huh.
And like they talk, they call it Pharmacy Island,
Oh, because fucking Hervé's running around all coked up or what?
No, that was like the mid-70s, so just everybody.
Everybody was.
But they loved Ricardo Montalban. He was just like, they all.
Ricardo wasn't all coked up or anything?
I don't know, but whatever he was, they just like, he's a real gentleman. He just treats everybody. So, the rich Corinthian leather. So
that's good. Cool, man. He had a nice, like, speaking tone, too. He's a welcome.
Yeah. And he was in Fantasy Island. He was in a lot of shit before that, too. I mean, he goes back to like the 40s and the 50s.
Oh, wow. So you got to hang out with Ricardo?
No.
No?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it wasn't like bring your kids to work. But the first thing I did get to go hang out with my dad,
mm-hmm.
I do a bunch of stuff, but not those shows. But like they used to have this show called Speak Up America. Like they had this show called Real People. Do you remember that or is that before your time?
Real People. What year was that? I was born in 77.
So it's like right before you were born.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. I don't remember that.
So it was like, kind of like pre Jerry Springer meets pre, Current Affair or whatever.
Oh, that's cool.
And, so that was Real People. And then
was it like a reality show? Like way before its time?
Yeah. And then, so Speak of America was like the ripoff of Real People, where America was speaking out about the issues of the day. And then, we went to, it was like when Cat Scratch Fever came out by Ted Nugent.
Yeah. And then Cat Scratch Fever.
And then like all these like people were offended by the cover of Cat Scratch Fever.
Mm-hmm. So which was what?
It was like Ted Nugent's chest being scratched by like these, girls' fingernails.
Mm-hmm.
With blood coming out. It's like a real like smell the glove.
Yeah, Smell the Glove by Spinal Tap.
Yeah, but so like it was offensive to certain people back then, and so they were speaking up. America was speaking up about Ted Nugent and his vile. Yeah, they didn't care about his political philosophy.
Was it all real stuff, or did they have like actors just like?
No, this is like, we went to interview Ted Nugent. He was playing at the sports arena.
Uh-huh.
And we went to his hotel, and like my dad let me, I got to go with him to film the interview of, when they're filming the interview of Ted Nugent. And this is when like Ted Nugent wasn't playing the House of Blues. This is when he was like Yeah, like I guess as big as like the Chili Peppers or someone. Or,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And yeah, like the thing I remember, like the line I he was actually a really nice guy. Yeah, but the thing I remember was like the interviewers, like, you know, what do you think about all these ladies complaining about the violence on your record covers? And he's like, tisk tisk, wimps and pussies.
He's funny, man. He's a character. Like, I've really only heard him talking, like, on Howard Stern. He's been on Howard Stern a few times. And I really liked how he was on Howard Stern, you know. I don't know. Recently, he was saying some kind of crazy Republican. He always says crazy Republican shit, right?
Yeah, him and Hank Williams Jr. and Charlie Daniels, they all really...
You know that they drop N-bombs when they're at the parties by themselves, you know what I mean? And with their own crew and shit, you know? They're probably, you know, dropping N-bombs, a W-bomb.
Yeah, dude.
You know? You know what the W bomb is?
South?
No, Ted Nugent's from Michigan.
Oh, okay.
But Michigan's like a pretty redneck.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He likes to hunt and stuff. He hunts his own food and stuff, which is pretty cool, I guess. I mean, I don't know. If you're gonna kill the animal, you might as well eat it.
Yeah.
You know? He probably wears the animal's ass for a hat or something. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Sarah Palin's daughter started.
So you were early exposed because of your dad's job,
so
right?
So I go hang out and then, I'd go be like the equipment watcher and box dragger. And then from there went to like equipment setter upper.
Right.
And
that's like a technical term, right? A technical job description, job title.
It's called engine technician.
Technician, okay.
But I learned that early on. And then, because my dad was working when he was, you know, 14, so he figured I should be. And so I was. So I learned that stuff. But, yeah, so the news used to be on the film, and then he went to the TV on the film.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just got sick of working, doing like TV, like fictional programs, because it was, you know, it's just the same day in and day out. He thought it was more like factory work.
Mm-hmm.
And he liked doing the news better because it was more, you get to go different places and do different things.
Right. Something new. It's like kind of unexpected things will happen. Yeah. So.
You know, like one day it's Gerald Ford, the next day it's Patty Hearst, you know, you never.
Wow.
But so he moved back to the news, so he had to learn to do video. So he got like a early video camera, like a one, you know, these were tube cameras too. You know, had a vacuum tube, and he learned on that, and then got a better camera and started doing the news again on the video, and then from that he had the other camera left over, so he let me use that, and then I hooked it up to a VCR, like a home VCR, with a battery belt, you know, because we had like lighting battery belts,
right?
And then
that's pretty cool. So you have like, it's, and this is like way back then when it's things aren't like small, they're not compact or anything. I mean, these battery belts are probably huge.
Yeah,
the VCRs are probably like fucking giant lunch boxes and shit, right?
Yeah, because when I was engineering,
like a toolbox.
Yeah, we were shooting on 3/4-inch video because it's before even the news had camcorders.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'd be working, even like working for CBS News with them, with a big, like 3/4-inch recorder, which is like about maybe like 30 or 40 pounds,
mm-hmm.
hooked up to a cable. And I'd have to be running, following them with a camera, like operating the machine with one hand and mixing the sound and doing the boom with the other hand. And then, yeah, from there they got into the Betacam, and then all I have to do is mix sound, which made things easier.
Cool.
But yeah, so that's how I got the hand-me-down camera.
Mm-hmm. And was he like teaching you stuff, or did you kind of just learn on your own?
Yeah, he was teaching me because I was like kind of like
his apprentice, right?
Family apprentice, yeah.
Oh, that's cool, man. You and your dad are really close?
Off and on, yeah.
Yeah. But that was the one thing.
Depending on which wife he has, yeah.
So some of the stepmoms were kind of bitches then, right?
Yeah, the middle one. His girlfriend now is really cool.
Yeah? Oh, okay. That's good.
But
she's one you're proud to call mommy.
She's just, I guess.
She's just not a fucking bitch like the other ones.
Yeah, but my mom's cool too.
Yeah. Well, of course, yeah. Yeah, you got to love your mom and your dad. But I mean, you're a child of divorce. So, you know, it's kind of I guess that's kind of the way it is nowadays. You know, it's kind of like, you know, there's visitation and stuff like that, you know. Actually, I've never had a father figure around and stuff. So I'm like on another weird kind of broken family kind of a thing, you know. Mm-hmm. But and that's a common story. You know, there's some of my cousins and stuff, you know, were complaining about their dad's like girlfriends and stuff. Real bitches, real fucking kind of like movie, like Mommy Dearest type people and stuff.
It wasn't like on the Mommy Dearest level.
She wasn't like whipping you with hangers and stuff.
No, I mean, like my folks didn't split up till I was like already
an adult.
I was already out of the house.
Oh, okay. So is it really bad? Obviously it's a lot less bad.
I mean, I was already kicked out of the house, and then like they kicked each other out of the house.
Yeah. Cool.
But yeah, that's the way I got into the video, and like first I was like videotaping my friends. We do little, you know, experiment movies. Yeah.
What was the first movie that you did? Do you remember it?
Yeah, Helter Skelter 2. Which is just
were you in it or you just filmed it?
I filmed it.
Oh, okay.
And starred on these guys, the Waco Brothers, which were in a band called Armed Response.
Mm-hmm.
That they have like one song on this We Got Power compilation. But they were like these two identical twin kids. They were like a year older than me in my high school.
Uh-huh.
And I remember like one day they got in a fight and it was like they were both like wearing jeans. Black leather jackets, like one had like a Fear shirt, one had like a Black Flag shirt.
Both
had like skinheads.
Mm-hmm.
And they got in a fight, so it looked like the same guy like fighting with himself. But it was like those two and like, you know, just some other like high school friends. And then we did that, and then we were just like showing it to our friends. And then my friend
Alice. Did your friends like it? Did people like it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think anyone out of like our school and friends ever saw it, but one of my friend's brothers was a guy named my friend's was Alistair Newberry, was in our class, and then his older brother was George or Jorge Newberry.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a record company called Upstart Records, which did like Circle One and mm-hmm. Red Scare and bands like that. And he was putting on a show at the West LA Federal Building. They used to have like punk and reggae shows at the West LA Federal Building.
Oh, wow.
Like they used to have like marijuana demonstrations there, like legalized pot and then like Black Flag.
Oh, man, that's cool. At a federal building?
Yeah, we saw like Black Flag play there twice.
Oh, wow. And which Black Flag? The one with Keith Morris in it?
No, with Rollins.
Oh, okay. Rollins. What's your favorite Black Flag? The one with Rollins or Keith Morris or... So who's the other guy?
There's Ron Reyes.
Yeah, Ron Reyes.
I don't know. I might go for saying I like a lot of the Black Flags, but the one that doesn't get the credit that it's due was the instrumental Black Flag.
There's an instrumental Black Flag?
Yeah, they went for like a couple months as an instrumental band because Rollins went on this like spoken word tour and then left the rest of them there. So they did a thing with just Greg Ginn, Bill Stevenson, and Kira Rossler, where they were just playing instrumental. And then, you know, they went from playing like the Civic to playing at like the Laundry and Anti Club and places like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was rad. I mean, it's like, it's, you know, it sounded like King Crimson or Mahavishnu Orchestra. It was, yeah, that's what the process of weeding out was. So that was really heavy. I like probably the... I like the Bill and Kira and Henry Black Flag a lot, too.
Yeah.
But they all have different aspects.
So what got you started into...
Okay, back to the story, sorry.
Yeah, into like...
filming bands?
Because when I was reading, it said that punk rock changed your life. So when did you like discover punk rock and like what was the story?
Finish answering the question about how I started filming or go back to how the punk rock...
Just let it flow, I guess. I don't know. I'm just drinking a beer right here.
Okay, well, like the first, you know... In junior high, I was just more kind of like a stoner kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was more into like Jethro Tull and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
Black Sabbath, Led Zeppelin. I heard punk, you know. And then I used to listen to, there was a show called Dr. Demento on KMET that I listened to a lot, which is on every Sunday. And he played some punk on there.
But he played also like a lot of like weirdo music.
It was
right?
all like real weirdo music, and with the weirdo part of the punk, yeah. Like, uh-huh. I mean, he played like he was the one that was always playing like mother, like he like a Mother's Day. He would just play all Mothers of Invention for 2 hours.
Oh, cool, yeah.
And this was on KMET, which was like the big commercial rock mm-hmm. radio station of the 70s. But that's what I was listening to when I was in junior high, and then my first day of high school. I guess I went to the tree where the punker people were hanging out.
Uh-huh.
And then they said that after school, X was filming at the Whiskey.
Wow.
And so, like, I tagged along. We all took the bus to the
That's
Whiskey.
Fucking cool,
yeah,
man.
That's so fucking cool, dude. You can't wow. do shit like that anymore.
Yeah, I know.
Can't.
We never fucking done that shit. You know, like, fucking, hey, after school, we're going to go see fucking X or something. Yeah. You know, if like, you want to come down. But you, did you know who X was?
I knew who they was. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I didn't, you know, like, I didn't really heard them that much, you know. I heard, like, you know, DOA, Black Flag, Sex Pistols.
Mm-hmm.
But I hadn't, you know, I hadn't heard X that much. And then mm-hmm. it was also different. Like, you know, I went down there and I was, like, seeing it and experiencing it was a lot different than just hearing it.
What was it like when you first walked into the show? Like, I remember like my first punk show, I was kind of nervous, mm-hmm. you know, I was nervous because it's like a new thing that you're trying to get into and you want, you know, you want to like try to like be, you know,
yeah, I was
like
nervous and
crowd.
Curious. Yeah. And then like in, yeah, junior high, I was kind of like the outcast weirdo kid.
Uh huh.
And then it's like all of a sudden you walk in the door and it's like a convention of like the outcast weirdo kids from like
yeah.
everywhere. And then
it's pretty cool, huh?
And then then Ray Manzarek was playing keyboards for him too. And then like, yeah, the Doors was part of that. Yeah, like Doors, Jefferson Airplane, Big Brother.
Wow.
Jimmy Henry, yeah, like the part of like the stoner, like, you know, old school stoner rock, you know, royalty.
Right.
So then, you know, here's the X, you know, with all these people like slam dancing and all this stuff. And then Ray Manzarek comes out and starts playing Soul Kitchen. Yeah. So it's like the connection to, yeah. Yeah.
And it took off from there.
It took off from there. After that, I was just, you know, I was hooked.
Yeah. Did you bring a recorder or anything to film?
No, but I can go for my first recording because it goes along with your show from about a month ago of how I recorded my first band.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was, I watched the Doobie Brothers episode of What's Happening.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're talking about when we had Raj in, right? That's yeah. my favorite What's Happening Tons. Episode, yeah.
So I saw that, and then my parents were going to, like, taking us to, like, a benefit for, like, Jerry Brown was running for either governor or president, like probably around 1976.
Uh-huh.
So there was like a benefit concert at the Universal Amphitheater with like John Denver and Jackson Browne.
Oh, shit.
And so I had like this realistic tape recorder. And yeah, that's when the Universal Amphitheater didn't have a roof, so it was outside.
Mm.
So I was wearing like a parka and I snuck the realistic tape recorder in and taped John Denver.
It was a giant one, right?
It was about as big as your laptop.
Shit.
Yeah, man, shit was big, man.
Yeah.
I don't know if you watched the episode of What's Happening with the Doobie Brothers in there, but reruns
it wasn't
snuck
as big
a giant.
As, it wasn't a reel-to-reel or nothing. It had a cassette.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, cool, man. Hey, you know what? Let's play another couple songs, and we will talk more with Dave Travis on the More Music Radio Pod. All right.
Hello? Hey, to Ernesto, bitch.
Fuck you, big face.
Fuck you.
The More Music Radio Pod. We'll be right back.
Music Radio Pod at skidrow.la. More Music Radio Pod.
Welcome back to the More Music Radio Pod. We are here with Dave Travis. What's going on, man?
So, we're talking about the first punk show I went to was the X.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like 14 years old, too. So it was real mind-blowing.
Damn, man.
And then about a month later, like the Who was playing at the Coliseum and the Clash was opening up.
That's cool right there.
Wow.
So, cool. So that was another show we took the bus to. Like, you know, took the bus to the Coliseum, waited in line, you know, it was like $11, to see the Who and the Clash.
I used to get excited just to go to the Highland, you know what I mean? Go see a movie at the Highland after school, be like, hey, we're going to go do something exciting. We're going to go watch, Predator or something over at the Highland or some shit.
So the Clash plane, they had like a slam pit at the, you know, like the football field of the Coliseum.
Wow.
So that was pretty impressive to watch.
Did you go in the slam pit?
A little bit.
Did they call it the slam pit or mosh pit? What was it called?
It was never the mosh pit.
Yeah.
That was the New York term. That's another Yiddish word, is from mishmash, is to mix.
Oh, okay.
So that's why the people in New York call it the Mosh Pit.
Oh, okay.
It's another, like a lot of Yiddish people in New York.
Mm-hmm.
But in California was the Slam Pit,
mm-hmm.
and started in California, so that's what
we they call it, the Mole Pit.
Really?
Nah, they should. That's what I want. That would be cool if they did that, right? Call it the Mole Pit. That means kind of like,
yeah,
I guess, mishmash.
East LA punk, yeah. Right there. Yeah.
So that sent you off, man. You were really interested. Punk rock changed your life.
Yeah, seriously.
What was the first band that you went and videotaped? And what did you use?
Okay, so back to the filming. So I mm-hmm. gotta film my friends.
You know, this is film, not videotape,
this
right?
This is videotape.
Oh, okay, videotape.
Dave Markey, who you have on your thing coming up, he was doing film. But I had my dad's video camera, mm-hmm. the hand-me-down one, hooked up to a home VCR with a big battery pack, battery belt.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first show I taped, because my friend's brother was put on the show at the Federal Building, the first band was this band called Francis X and the Bushmen,
mm-hmm.
which is that dude Francois from Motorcycle Boy. But this is his band before that. And it had, Keith Clark, who was became in the Circle Jerks, was the drummer. And Harry Perry, like the dude that roller skates around the...
In Venice?
Yeah, he was on guitar.
Oh, yeah? That's pretty cool.
And so they
play. I saw that guy the last. He's always there, man. Yeah.
So it was them, Stukas Over Bedrock, Stalag 13, No Mercy, and Against. And then I ran out of batteries.
How long would a battery last?
This was like a battery belt.
Uh-huh.
And that would that lasted maybe like 3 or 4 hours.
That's pretty cool, though, like a battery belt. That's pretty. Yeah. Did you feel like when you're strapping it on, you're like, yeah,
Batman.
Yeah. Did you feel like Batman?
Yeah. So that was the first thing I taped.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, like the first band was the dude Francis X. And so I met him. And then he asked me to go tape his band. It was playing at the Cafe de Grand.
Mm-hmm.
So then I went there to film. And because I didn't know you could go film in a club, this Federal Building show, my friend's brother was putting it on, plus it was a public space.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was okay to film. But this is going into a club with a camera. But the cafe was pretty, laissez-faire. And, they saw it was just like some, 16-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm.
And
so they weren't asking to see, any permits or anything like that. Did you think you needed permits or something?
Yeah, because you'd see all this stuff on the TV and then you see all Riff Randall's trials and tribulations or something. So you thought it'd be like that. But I mean, at other places it was if you tried to go to the Roxy or something, you couldn't just bring a camera in. But the cafe, I go in and tape, and then they just, after that, I could just basically go in whenever and tape. And there was another place called the Music Machine in West LA. I just started taping, and then, in my neighborhood, the public library, the librarian was the Falling James, the guy that's, he writes for LA Weekly now, but he used to be in the, he was in the Leaving Trains. He was in Leaving Trains back then too.
Mm.
But this is before, internet and all this stuff. So, I just, when I was in junior high or 10th grade and stuff, I'd go hang out in the library and he would bring me magazine articles from 1971 to read about the Stooges or whatever. And I didn't know about it. So.
Oh, that's cool, man. Yeah. I needed one of those. I need one of those right now, man. Yeah. He kind of mentored you and
he was
told you what was cool and shit, right?
Yeah. And he was the punk rock librarian.
Mm-hmm.
And so I learned a lot from him. And then mm-hmm. he wanted me to go film his band, The Leaving Trains. So from doing that, I got into start taping at the Music Machine, which was the club at Pico and Bundy in West LA.
Mm.
And just kind of escalated, people were relatively cool with me, you know, there's only a few bands that didn't let me tape. Otherwise, people were generally pretty mellow.
What was the music scene like back in the mid-80s when you were doing that stuff, when you first started that?
It was pretty crazy. Yeah, you know, like, and it got really crazy by the, like, by 1986.
Mm-hmm.
There's a place called Fender's Ballroom down in Long Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And that place just got, after a while, it was another thing that was, like, Golden Voice would eventually start letting me just film stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
And this place like Fender's, it just got like so crazy that people stopped going.
Like how crazy? Like what do you mean? Like a lot of fights, like, yeah, people like, getting stabbed and shit or
yeah,
what?
Yeah, like violently crazy, yeah.
Oh, man. Who had like the most violent crowd back then?
What band?
Yeah. Or what, like group of bands and stuff?
Like, Suicidal Tendencies had like a whole faction. Like uh-huh. Circle One had a whole faction.
Uh-huh.
There's this whole like skinhead movement, like South Bay Skins, and then there was like Long Beach had like the Sons of Samoa too. Yeah, like
all these wow people,
those guys were big, and like these big Samoa people that would like go to the, you know, Fender's was Long Beach, they go there to regulate, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
is that where Angry Samoans got their name or something? They went to one
that was I think from the wrestlers. From there's
no the wrestlers Angry Samoans
the Nuke and Stika the
yeah
in the 70s or these, I don't know if that's where they got their name, but I assume, yeah, wow. they had
that's Angry one crew Samoans. I don't want to mess with, man, the fucking Samoan crew, man.
But Angry Samoans was going, the band was going before they started doing the shows at Fender's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool.
But so it kind of just escalated. So
what's the craziest thing that you ever seen there? Did you get like beat up or anything?
No, the only place I got beat up at two places, which were like the Coconut Teaser and the Palace.
I went to the Coconut Teaser once. I didn't like it there, man.
And the Coconut Teaser, I was down there like the band with like my sister's band was playing down there.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was the Love Dolls. And then the drummer, Janet Housden, through a bottle, and then like at these like Beowulf guys, which was like a set of suicidal people. And then like, yeah, they thought I threw it, and I was like laughing.
Uh-huh.
Not at them, I was like laughing at just what someone was saying, something totally unrelated.
Oh man, so that's, and just your look, huh? Yeah. They saw you laughing and they're like, oh, that motherfucker.
Yeah, so then like after the show, like I bailed, and then like they followed me down like Sunset, and yeah,
they just beat the shit out of you?
Black-eyed, and then I just ran into the liquor store. And the other time was at the Palace. Like, this is at a Johnny Winter concert, too, not even a punk show. Like, my friend, just, you know, too many substances or something. Like, I guess didn't remember that it was a Johnny Winter concert, not a punk show. It's like, tried like running up the stage to do like a stage dive. Yeah, it's just doing too much shit. And then, like, uh-huh. Yeah.
So how did you get your ass kicked out of that?
Because after the show, like the bouncers came and found us in the parking lot. And then like, yeah, it was like the Hollywood Palace bouncers versus like the high school kids.
What? Oh man. So they beat all of you up?
Yeah. Event staff.
That sucks, man.
Event staff was actually scarier than the suicidals, I guess.
Damn, dude. And they were like, all right, we'll see you in the parking lot.
They didn't even say that.
They didn't warn you. If they would have said that, you probably would have just left right after the show.
We were just like drinking in the parking lot, and then all of a sudden, like all these dudes with the yellow jackets.
Mm-hmm. That's funny, man. Hey, so tell us about, I know you from Carnage Asada.
Yeah.
And Carnage Asada, I remember seeing you guys. We were talking about it earlier, seeing you guys over at Mr. T's Bowl for the first time. And we had just started playing there. And I think it was like one of our first shows, the Mormons. Our second show was actually at Mr. T's Bowl. We played at L's Bar. And then I think the next day we played at T's Bowl. So we had kind of a cool run there at T's for a while. And so I remember Carnage Asada. You had long hair back then, too. I remember that.
It was before I ran out.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've always liked you guys, man. I always looked up to you guys. I've always thought it was cool. Like, I like George's stage presence. He's like a, for people who haven't seen Carnage Asylum, he's like a neighborhood guy. You know what I mean? He looks like my uncle, kind of. He reminds me of my uncle a little bit, you know. And yeah, man. So I remember from back in the Mr. T's Bowl days over there, and Al's Bar and Mr. T's Bowl were actually very special places, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I moved to Northeast LA. I moved to Mount Washington because it was halfway between Al's Bar and Mr. T's.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool, man.
And then they both, Al's closed and T's changed.
Yeah, man. I think we're going to try to give Arlo a call. Did you want to try giving him a call, Nick? Let's see if we can get Arlo on the line, man. We can say hi to Arlo. Arlo's been on the show a couple times. He was actually on the second episode of the More Music Radio Pod.
Yeah, Arlo's like a great champion for the Carnage Asylum, yeah.
Yeah, man, he's a great champion just for like everything. The fucking cool part of the LA music scene. Yeah, you know?
The band Somos Misteriosos, they have a song, Arlo's Got Game.
I haven't heard that song, but I know Somos Misteriosos. They're I know Dulé is in it. Dulé used to be a security guard over at Mr. T's, but that's where we met Dulé, yeah. Man. And it's cool. He's a really cool dude. Like, there was a really cool scene at Mr. T's Bowl. Yeah, just
but then
like
they replaced him with like some guy that was like, yeah, they replaced like the big guy security with like the little, yeah, the barking chihuahua.
Yeah, yeah. There were actually like, there was a run of just like fucking asshole fucking security guards. Yeah, like
with a jacket.
There was that fucking, the fucking little fucking, there's a little midget dude, right?
Yeah, it's usually like, yeah, because you look at security guards, usually like the bigger ones are mellower because they don't really need to prove themselves.
Yeah.
And then the little ones are always just like, aggro.
Yeah. And like we went there all the time, you know, so we would like kind of like fight with those guys and not physically, you know, but just kind of like fucking, you know, make them know that, you know, like fucking they don't belong there, you know, kind of, because they were really bad. Like they would steal the money for the shows, you know, like people would do shows and they would take the money for themselves. Like they were fucking totally ripping off the fucking bar and like fucking selling drugs out of there and shit. And then they're giving us shit for like fucking having a good time, you know, like.
Yeah, I mean, they like gave, yeah, we were playing there, like one of the last times we played there, it might have been Arlo's birthday or like the time before that.
Yeah.
When we said we wouldn't play there again, like, you know, they were giving, like, George's mom came down.
Mm.
And like she didn't have her ID, but she had like gray hair,
right?
Know? So yeah, she's obviously not
underage, under 21, right?
Yeah.
But they loved just that position, being able to decide if people can stay or go, you know. And they were like that too. Like they would, you know, they don't care. You would have to follow every rule by their book, you know. I don't know, man. T's is cool. It's so sad though now, man. The fucking owner after Joe T died, and we tell this story all the time on this show, man. You know, after Joe T died, his son took over, and like we're actually waiting for him to go away. He has this thing on like on the left side of his face will get numb sometimes, and then I'm like, oh man, please just full on stroke. That way, like somebody, because he won't let go of the place. Yeah, that guy won't let go of the place, and like the only good thing about T's right now, and you know, the Mormons are actually have that same kind of boycott. We don't want to play there anymore. Only the last time we played there was for Arlo's birthday party a couple of years ago.
Yeah, we played there too, because same thing, we love Arlo.
Yeah.
And Arlo's still there. He's actually the victim of the whole thing, yeah.
But he's the one that's fucking kept it going, you know, after Joe died. I mean, Arlo is like the heart of Mr. T's Bowl, you know, like, I don't know, it's really, it's sad, and I wish like I wish someone would, you know, do a Mr. T's Bowl documentary. In fact, like there was a Mr. T's Bowl documentary being done by, I don't know if you know Sacco. Sacco and man, his fucking name is escaping me right now. There was a Mr. T's Bowl documentary that never got finished, and like there is footage out there, and the Mormons are part of it, and like I know a lot of bands are part of that, and
I got a lot of footage from T's too, because that was a place where they let me.
Right.
Still, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You should get like a bunch of T's footage together and put something out, man. I mean, you're a movie maker. I mean, you've done a lot. I mean, you've been like filmed a whole bunch of bands, right? I mean, you play in a band. You are one of the founders of Carnage Asylum, right?
Yeah.
You started that. Tell me about how you guys started that.
Okay. Well, the genesis or origin of Carnage Asylum was like Dave Jones and I had a band in 11th grade called Permanent Trails.
Mm-hmm.
So that goes back to, I guess, like 83 or 84.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like our, yeah, like kind of psychedelic punk band.
Uh-huh.
And that was...
Were you guys doing a lot of drugs?
Maybe.
And, you should talk to Nick, too. I mean, I think the three of us here...
Yeah, Nick, you could... Yeah, you know, just because you're in the other room doesn't mean you're locked away. But, yeah.
A lot of psychedelics?
The guitar player, singer guy was, you know, really into that.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, then he got into less psychedelic things, which uh-huh. got him into less psychedelic places.
Yeah.
But that was like my, yeah, I was... That was the first kind of punk band I was in was Permanent Trails.
Mm-hmm.
And that was with Dave Jones.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually playing drums. Dave was on bass. And then this guy, Jeff Spindler, was the guitar player. And we played the Café de Grand and mainly just played, you know, parties and stuff. And that was when we, like, early Generator shows, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dave quit being this band called Magnolia Thunder Pussy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was with his drummer called Pat Palma.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and the guitar player was Chris Hunley. And then we all graduated. And then, like Magnolia Thunder Pussy, they moved up. They went to UC Santa Cruz. So they moved up to Santa Cruz and did Magnolia Thunder Pussy back up there. Then Pat moved back down to LA.
Mm-hmm.
And that band kind of dissolved. And then, yeah,
you were telling me about your friend Dave. He's actually somebody that you worked with, right? I mean, you've done a lot of music videos with him.
That's Dave Markey, but Dave I'm talking Markey, about right? Dave Jones.
Oh, okay. There's a lot of Daves, man. Yeah, that's a very common name.
Yeah. But the Dave, so Pat Palma moved back down to LA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his family's from Venice, and I ran into him at some show or something, and then he told me to come videotape his band. And he was in this like weird trippy experimental band called Halfway to Cleveland. And so I went to videotape them.
Mm-hmm.
Got on the kind of brain train, and it was like a this old beatnik dude named Doc was from like the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
It was his band, and he played the like the clarinet and sax, cello. And then Pat played the drums, and a guy played named Phil Garraway played guitar. And then they were playing at this place called the Rose Theater down on Rose, like around Lincoln and Venice.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started videotaping them. They would do something every week there. And then the bass player of that band quit, got kicked out, whatever. And then they asked me to play bass, even though I didn't really know that much bass.
Uh-huh.
But they wanted someone that didn't know how to play bass to play bass.
But you played guitar, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You know, a lot of like really good bass players are actually previously guitar players, you know, so.
But the interesting one is Chris Kirkwood from the Meat Puppets started on banjo.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's why he fingers like that.
Oh, all right.
But so I ended up playing bass in Halfway to Cleveland with Pat Palma, the drummer of the band that Dave Jones quit to Permanent Trails with.
Mm-hmm.
To be in. So then we're in this like weird experimental jazz band, and that goes from like 88. I guess that band actually started in the 70s, but
mm-hmm.
you know, Pat was playing there for a year or two before I got in, and I got in 88.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went to about 93 or 94.
It was like a jazz, kind of trippy jazz band or something?
Yeah, really freaky jazz. I got one of the things, but you already have your seven songs.
Left. Oh, yeah.
But
you should have like a Dave Travis show or something like that.
Maybe, but let me finish the story.
Oh, okay, sorry.
But this guy was like really, yeah, I don't know, sometimes it'd be like almost like fascist anarchy. Yeah, like he's like, yeah, no songs, no repetitive. Yeah, yeah. You play the same riff three times in a row. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah, it's not out there enough. So, yeah, me and Pat want to do like a side band from the Halfway to Cleveland, like a side band from the experimental jazz band. So we wanted to do like a improvised heavy metal band, like we did like an improvised like jazz, but with like heavy metal type riffs.
Oh, that's cool.
And so that was the original Halfway to Cleveland, was just me and Pat making recordings in his garage. And that was like in 88. And then we made a few recordings, and then I guess just we did that, and then went back to doing the just Halfway to Cleveland, and then eventually the leader, Doc Williams, he got lymphoma.
Mm.
And then before he passed, he gave me his cello, and that's actually the cello I play.
Okay.
Cello.
And so then, that's Doc's cello.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's interesting, man.
So it has like a whole heavy story behind that.
Yeah, I bet you cherish that cello.
Yeah. And then I just bought new strings today. And then I went to a high school reunion or something and ran into Dave Jones, and he had this band called Pipsqueak, and then got with a guy named Jesse Engel, and then he got me and Pat to play with him like their last show, which was actually, you know, that was at Raji's opening up for like Beck and Bad Dog when they were playing at Raji's.
Oh, wow.
And that was kind of like the end of that band. We just played the last show. But like the Dave Jones and Jesse wanted to play with me and Pat.
Mm-hmm.
So we started jamming together. And then, we needed a singer. And then I ran into George at some show. And like George went to high school with Dave Jones and I.
Mm-hmm.
But he never... Yeah, never.
You guys didn't hang out in high school, right?
No, we hang out all the time. Yeah.
In high school?
Yeah.
Okay, but was he like he's kind of like a cholo dude, right?
He was a cholo dude, but he's a punker dude too.
Ah, okay, cool.
Yeah, because that's from the legacy of busing. You know, like he was from East LA.
Yeah.
But they used to bus people back and forth.
Right.
So, yeah, he was bused from East LA to the West Side. And then, yeah, but he was a punk. Yeah, like, you know, I would go, even before I could drive a car back, you used to be able to, like, when you were 15 and a half, get, like, a learner's permit,
mm-hmm.
and you could ride a motorcycle because you didn't need an adult if you'd ever ride a motorcycle. So I'd ride my motorcycle to George.
That'd be funny if you needed an adult to ride a motorcycle with a permit. You have to have an adult sitting in the back.
Jerry Pendensky. So I'd ride my motorcycle to George's house in East L.A., George's apartment in East L.A., and then his mom would drive us to the Vex, and then we go like see like Black Flag.
Oh, that's stuff. Cool.
And then I go stay over at his house and then come back the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
And, but yeah, he was a total punker. He had the cholo thing going too.
Yeah. So did less people mess with you after you were hanging out with George?
No, it didn't make a...
Didn't make a difference. Did people mess with you a lot when you were
people mess with me like when I was in junior high.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, like I mean, like George and Dave Jones were already punkers in junior high, but I wasn't. But I guess like between like the punk rock and the acid, it didn't really. learned not to really stress about people in members only jackets. Yeah, harshing me for not being a member. Yeah.
Well, cool, man. Hey, know what? Let's take another quick break, okay. And we're gonna play
another story.
And then we'll get back to another story with Dave Travis. Before we go, I want to say that we heard in the last set we heard Lightning Woodcock with Brains and Personality.
Lightning Woodcock's
actually coming up right now. We're going to hear Lightning Woodcock, Brains and Personality, and we're going to hear The Eyes.
Yeah,
and song, Take That Quaalude.
The Eyes, where you play it or just play it?
Yeah, what's going on with The Eyes?
Yeah, I was just coming here from working on a video for Red Cross that Dave Markey's directing, and I was working as the...
So after the show, you're going to go back to work, right?
Yeah, I'm the generator operator and gaffer.
Oh, shit. Are they waiting for you right now?
No. I left the generator running and the lights set up.
Okay.
And, the Jeff McDonald's wife is Charlotte Caffey, who's from the bass player from the Go-Go's. But before she was in the Go-Go's, she was in this band called The Eyes, which is like a mask band. And the Mask was like the kind of like first real punk club in LA.
Oh, okay.
And this was a band with her and with DJ Bonebreak, who became the drummer of X before she was in the Go-Go's and he was in X. So it's like a real, you know, like a primal LA punk band that doesn't really get much notice, but here they are.
Oh, cool, man. Yeah. And Lightning Woodcock is going to play the Bloom Fest, right? We got to talk about the Bloom Fest coming up too.
That's right.
Carnage Asada is going to play it. Saccharine Trust, Third Grade Teacher.
Like Blood and the Missing Men.
And you know, actually the Mormons go back, way back to our first band, the Dyslexics. We played with Third Grade Teacher at the Whiskey. Mm-hmm. One of these shows where you had to sell tickets and shit, you know, and Third Grade Teacher was one of the bands that we played with, man. So
we sold more tickets.
I don't know. You know what? I don't know what happened. I think like, there, if you didn't like sell enough tickets, like I think they would confiscate your equipment until you could pay the money or something like that. And I think we just got like a good deal where all we had to sell was like maybe like 10 tickets for like $5 or something. They just wanted $50 from us, you know. But yeah, that's the way it was. Never pay to play, kids. I mean, that's something that we did once and we'll never do it again. Never.
You're always better off just play it, just get some friends and play in a backyard.
Yeah, it's more fun anyway. You know, the
it's
fucking
way more fun. Yeah. You can bring your own beer.
Way more funner, man. So, yeah, we're going to hear some Lightning Woodcock and then we're going to hear The Eyes. And then we will be back with Dave Travis on the More Music Radio Pod. All right.
Don't take this offensively.
The More Music Radio Pod.
Oh, you don't mind wanting to.
SkidRow.LA.
Like Benny Hanna, a woman.
This is Isis Williams, and you're listening to the More Music Radio Pod on skidrow.la.
Lots and lots and lots of drugs.
Perfect 44 double D 2636. You're listening to the More Music Radio Pod on skidrow.la.
Yeah, welcome to, or welcome back to the More Music Radio Pod. We're kind of spaced out right now. Blasting off into outer space right now.
Concept.
We're here with Dave Travis.
And we're going to take a little break from the storytelling to tell you a little bit about the future.
Yeah. And this is perfect future music.
Future music, Future Now, which was a song by the Bell Rays, which was Tony Faith's band.
Oh, okay.
Another Carnage connection.
It's kind of, she kind of reminds me of Tina Turner a little bit, the singer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
But a week from Saturday, 21st of July, 2012, there's going to be a big, big fair called Bloomfest. And that's going to be in downtown L.A., between like 2nd and 4th Street, just like between Alameda and Santa Fe. It's a big free festival.
It's all ages.
All ages. Got four stages. You got like a pop stage, a disco stage, or electronic house or whatever, DJ stage. Sponsored by Jaritos too.
You know, like you get free Jaritos?
I don't know.
What's your favorite flavor of Jaritos?
Probably orange, I guess.
Orange?
Yeah.
I like the lemon lime. I do like the tamarindo. That's pretty good.
I don't like the tamarind
taste. You don't like that?
No.
Do you remember those little elote candies?
Yeah.
That had like the chili on it? Do you like
those? I used to teach school in South Central, so.
So you know all that stuff, right?
Yeah, I'm like the victim of Mexican candy. Yeah.
What's your favorite Mexican candy?
I don't really like it that much, yeah.
What's your favorite candy?
I don't know, probably like Almond Joy or...
Oh, okay. It's a different palette. Yeah. It's definitely a different palette in candies and stuff.
Yeah, I'm more into like coconut and chocolate than chemicals and food color and chili.
You want like some kind of like a fruit or a nut in there that's good, you know?
But yeah, so it's a big festival. It's on four blocks. You got the Jaritos DJ stage.
Mm-hmm.
You got the Kid Zone stage where you'll have, among other things, Latino Youth Theater does songs of from Annie.
That's cool.
And
damn. But I mean, really, what we're taught, what we're really looking forward to.
And then there's the main stage.
The main stage.
Starring KCRW and a bunch of main bands that no one ever heard of. Then, or someone must have heard of them.
But, yeah.
But they all sound the same.
Yeah, they all got fancy haircuts and like weird clothes and stuff.
Yeah. Weird clothes that they bought from the weird clothes store.
Yeah. They have to buy weird clothes from the weird clothes store. They can't make their own weird clothes.
Yeah.
They have to have already prefabricated weird clothes.
Yeah. You can't get it from the swap meet. But then there's also the Bloom stage. And that's being put on by a guy named Alberto Miares.
Mm-hmm.
And he did the downtown art fairs with Joel Bloom in the 1990s.
Mm.
And
we were talking about Joel Bloom. Who was that guy?
Joel Bloom was a guy that owned the Bloom's General Store, which was down in the corner of 3rd and Hewitt, in the same building as the Al's Bar building and the American Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And he was kind of like a neighborhood icon. And that's when that, you know, era was kind of, you know, you go down to Al's Bar and like, you know, people like...
Pretty intense, right?
You got to like pay the guy $1 to watch your car. Or else.
Yeah.
Or else, yeah.
Yeah.
And then...
or else he'll fucking bust the window, go and take a shit in it or something.
And then... yeah, the neighborhood's changed since then.
Mm-hmm.
But he was just kind of like an icon of that area, of that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
he was like an ornery character or something, right?
Yeah. And then Alberto was one of his buddies. And he actually ran... There was a place across the street called the Wolfskill Theater that he was doing stuff there. And then yeah, he was doing those downtown art fairs. And I think the first one I just like was riding my bike. And then I just ran into it was like a stage with like Olin and the Mechalodiacs was playing.
Oh, wow.
And then I like, weaseled my way into playing the next year, which was like, it was like Carnage Asada, Mechalodiacs, Youth Brigade, Morris Tepper.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, all the stuff like that. Yeah. And we did that.
Was that like 2011 or something?
This is like 96 and 97.
Oh, okay. So this has been going on for a while already, right?
Yeah.
This is the first time that I've heard of Bloomfest.
It wasn't called Bloomfest back then.
Oh, okay.
Back then it was called Downtown Art Fair.
Oh, all right.
And, but Alberto was one of the guys behind that. And then, like, flash forward to, you know, like about 2005. And, you know, my daughter was in kindergarten with, his son. So like we hooked up again.
Wow.
We were actually doing like the Mount Washington Elementary School Pumpkin Festival.
Oh, that's cool, man.
Yeah, one year we had.
How many kids you have?
Two.
Oh, wow.
And
you do everything, man. You do video, you do audio, you play music, and you're a father.
Yeah.
Awesome, man.
That's what happens. And then, so we were doing like, yeah, we had the Mount Washington Pumpkin Festival, and we were working together on that. And then, I see the guy at shows still, you know, once every few months. And then he messaged me that, I guess what happened was, you know, it went from being like the way I described it to being something by like the Arts Commission and Neighborhoods Council and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And KCRW kind of bogarted their way in. And so last year, yeah, it was just all this like really like mainstreamish music.
Yeah.
And then like the...
In other words, it's kind of getting lame now. And that was that what you're saying?
Maybe. And then, but what happened was all the people that were originally there, like it's almost like the indigenous people of the that neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not indigenous in terms of being Indians, but indigenous of being the people that lived in that neighborhood.
Yeah, before. Forever. Yeah. Yeah.
Got kind of like just drinking in the corner because they didn't want to hear the.
Yeah, so they didn't like it.
Yeah. So, or indie music, I guess is what they trying to avoid. Yeah. So this year they gave him a stage to just keep all those people away from the rest of the festival.
Oh, that's awesome, dude. And this is the Al's Bar tribute stage?
Yeah. It's,
hell yeah, dude.
So it's...
That's like really symbolic, really? Yeah. That is symbolic, right? Because that's what kind of Al's Bar was. Like it was like its own separate thing, you know, kind of like separate from the fucking passé shit, you know? It's like that's where you would see the real shit. We played with Dayglow Abortions over at Al's Bar, man. Like that was like one of the highlights of... I mean, me playing music and stuff, you know, like fucking Al's Bar, man. Fucking awesome. So there's going to be Al's Bar stage. Yeah. That's what I want to go to.
It's actually called the Blooms stage.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but when he was describing to me what he wanted to do, you know, he said he wanted to do like an Al's Bar stage with like all the old Al's Bar bands.
Mm-hmm.
But the official name for it is the Blooms stage. And then when I made, yeah, and then the other stage is getting all this like promo from the KCRW.
Mm-hmm.
And then the DJ stage is getting all their promo from DJ whatever and Jaritos. And then the kid stage and the Bloom stage was kind of, yeah,
better
for themselves. So I just said, yeah, I'll do the UHF TV. We'll be the media partner for the stage.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And they kind of just said, go for it. They're actually the, yeah, I might be talking shit, but... Yeah, like the festival's actually pretty cool about it. I mean, they're letting him book all these bands. Yeah, they're pretty, hands off. Yeah.
They're lame, but they're cool lames.
They put one band on there. Originally, they were going to have like a DJ playing like a house mix between each band.
Uh-huh.
But I actually was able to talk him out of it. So we got... Adam Baum from the KXLU show, Final Countdown.
Oh, cool.
You know about that show from, it's like the original hardcore show in LA from like 83 to 90. And it's like the first station, first place that played Slayer on the radio.
Oh, that's cool, man.
So he's going to DJ and not play house music. And
that seems like for me, that's going to be the stage that I'm going to be hanging out at.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's just begging for the Mormons mobile unit to just appear and just fucking take over the KCRW stage.
We might have to send them out. But I mean, you have like one block of...
Dispatch the mobile unit?
Yeah, we have one block of safety.
Yeah.
But once you go beyond that block, you're out of our protection.
No, see, that's where we got to go. We have to overtake the territory.
But if you need a place to load in...
Yeah, there we go. There we go. Yeah, so, I mean, I definitely want to check it out, and you never know, man. It sounds like it's begging for the Mormons mobile unit. But, I mean, even if we don't show up, there's going to be fucking tons of fucking good shit going on at that stage.
Yeah, it's like a thing. Like, you show up over here, and people will just think that you're part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you go beyond that block. Yeah.
We love going beyond that block, man, because people get so mad at us sometimes, man. Oh, we get into some trouble sometimes. So Carnage Assault is gonna play there.
Yeah, I'll give you the whole lineup. I'm not allowed to tell the times because of it's not officially released from the
And station. It's never on time anyway.
No, it will be on time.
Oh, it will?
Because they booked like 12 bands on the stage and it has to end at 10 because it's a city permit.
Oh, okay.
So...
You can squeeze everything in by 10, no?
We will. Yeah, me and Alberto just got to be quick in the cracking the whip and making enemies, I guess.
Oh, so you're going to be running the stage then, right?
Yeah, Alberto's the head honcho, and I'm the medium honcho, I guess. But, yeah, it's we got to just really you know, if everyone has half hour set, 15 minute set change, and it's harsh, but you don't want to just like fuck over the last two bands.
Yeah.
And then
that's true. Yeah. Because that's who it would affect. Right. I mean, there's a chain reaction. If somebody's 5 minutes late, then it turns into, it grows into 10 minutes and 15 minutes off. And then the last band ends up having only like fucking 10 minute set or something.
Yeah. And it's kind of like amazing that a show like this could happen like on the public place. Yeah. Usually, you know, they're more into the safer, thing.
And right.
then, but you know, once it's 10 o'clock and the permit's over, you know,
that's it.
You know, you're not going to, the police aren't going to say, oh, you didn't get your chance.
Yeah.
You only got 5 minutes. Sorry.
Your carriage will turn into a pumpkin after 10.
So we don't want to turn carriages into pumpkins. So,
has to be done. So let us know who's playing that thing.
Yeah, I'm going to after.
Let's see. Well, you got an iPhone, man.
Yeah, I got the iPhone.
Oh, cool. How do you like it?
I actually love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like fighting it, and then
I'm fighting it right now.
Like we had to go to Japan because that's where my wife's family's from.
Oh, okay. So you needed a dual band.
We needed a phone that worked in Japan.
Yeah.
And then I had a track phone before that.
No. Like a Go phone or something like that?
It's a track phone. It's like a,
maybe you get it at 7-Eleven?
No, Target. And then you get the cards at Food for Less.
There you go. It's a big step up from that, right?
But this one, like I'm video, like half the stuff I'm shooting on UHF TV, I'm shooting
with your iPhone?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
And like same thing, I'm shooting the Bloomfest because I had to be, lugging equipment and telling people to get off the stage and stuff.
How is the sound quality though when you're using the iPhone for that?
Shitty to great, depending on the.
How's the sound quality for most of the stuff that you filmed? I know we were talking about, I don't want to get back to that, but you were talking about you used to use like old video and stuff. So how did the sound translate?
Same thing. Like some came out kind of crappy, but a lot of the stuff someone was like going straight from the soundboard.
Mm-hmm.
But the bands that are playing.
Back to the stage. L's Bar. All right, everybody. This is the L's Bar stage. The Bloom stage over at the Bloom Fest.
I won't tell you the exact order because I have to get off the email.
All right.
And we're running out of time.
Yeah.
But the general order, starting at 2 o'clock exactly, or maybe even 1:50, will be Tawny Ellis, which is the person that got put on the stage from the other stage. And then after that, it's going to be Third Grade Teacher,
mm-hmm.
Glassell Park, and really amazing band. Dave Guerrero, Laura Smith. I think Bob Lee's going to be playing drums for him.
Mm-hmm.
Sabrina. So, pretty wacky, heavy band.
Cool.
Then after that's going to be Swords of Fatima, which is Nick Scott from Pop Defect, which is probably of all the bands, the band that played the most at Al's Bar is probably Pop Defect.
Huh.
So he's out there representing for them.
Cool.
Then I think it's going to be Lightning Woodcock. We've been on the show many times.
Yeah.
Kind of in the ZZ Top, Snatching the Poontangs, that kind of music. And then after that would be the Size Queen, which is some of the girls from Betty Blowtorch, but not all of them, so they can't call themselves Betty Blowtorch. So they call themselves Size Queen. But, just heavy music played by ladies, so
good right
to see and hear. And then Sharon Needles, who's in the Size Queen, she played at Al's Bar with, Betty Blowtorch, she used to play there a lot, but even before that, she was in Bud Trumpet.
Mm-hmm.
She actually replaced my sister in the Love Dolls, too. So,
oh, cool.
So, she goes back to Al's Bar a long time. Then we got Carnage Asada.
Mm-hmm.
Then Saccharine Trust.
All right.
Another old school.
Yeah, we got, in fact, before we go, we're going to play a Saccharine Trust song right now. We go into the next break.
And Mike Watt and the Missing Man.
Right on. Yeah, we heard some Mike Watt earlier. We heard Man Shitting Man.
And then Downtown Devil Dogs, which is Alberto's band, which is like a blues band.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sukiya, which is kind of like this, like that future music you were playing. That kind of
Cool. All right.
And hopefully get all that in by 10.
Cool. All right, man. So this is Saturday?
Next Saturday, July 21st.
All right, cool, man.
And it's going from 2 to 10. Yeah, we got the punker stage. If you don't like that, you can go to the disco stage. Or
yeah, go disco out KCRW or KCRW and you... We'll see. You'll definitely see.
Cool kids.
You'll see definitely where the crowds go and stuff at the Bloom Fest. Everybody's going to be at the Bloom stage next week, Saturday, July 21st. We'll be back with Dave Travis. Wait, okay, hold on.
But ideally, boys and girls and ladies and gentlemen, is if we get, say we get like 3 or 4 times more people at the Bloom stage than at the main stage.
Mm-hmm.
Then maybe next year there'd be 2 Bloom stages. Not as much of a main. Because this is the music that's actually from this neighborhood.
Right, right.
You know, we don't need the,
Yeah, thank you. Bands. Thank you, KCRW. But, you know, you can have a KCRW fest or something. You don't have to have a. I see what you're saying. I know what you mean. You don't want to talk too much shit because people are being nice and giving nice enough to give you a stage and stuff, you know? But at the same time, you're like, oh, what is this lame shit, man?
Yeah. But, I mean, you got to be grateful that they're actually letting us do that because most places, they just have that stage.
Yeah.
And maybe the kids zone. But,
all right.
Yeah. Here you could just punk out all day. If you get sick of it, you can go see... Latin Kids Theater does songs at Abby. But they got, like, you know, major amounts of food vendors. There's got a couple beer gardens. There's a beer garden right next to our stage.
Cool. That's plus, perfect. That's all I need to know. I will be right there at the beer garden.
Plus, there's, like, a beer garden at the disco stage.
I'm going to sneak a bottle of whiskey, too, but don't tell anybody, okay?
I won't. really, I guess there's 2 things that could happen. You get like a lot of people coming down. They say, Alberto, you're a genius. You know, you're in charge of booking all the bands for the stage next year.
Yeah.
Unless there's some kind of bad scene that happens. And then there's just,
Well, let's try to everybody keep it cool. Let's not fucking make the fucking Al's Bar Bloom stage look like shit. You know, let's not fight, but let's have a good time. Yeah.
Because I did like the stage at the LA Marathon for 2 years, but the second year was the one. And that was, Lightning Woodcock, his band before was Foreign Object, which was like the wrestling band.
Oh, okay.
And there's like them, Groovy Rednecks.
Oh, yeah, he told us about his wrestling. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, we set up, the first year we did it was like maybe like 94. And it's like raining really bad. We were like one of the only stages, we were off by Borners. We were like one of the only stages that actually happened. Like I rented a truck and we did it from inside a truck, like a Boxtel truck, truck. And then from that, they actually, we got the Hollywood and Vine stage the next year. So we set up, sponsored by Frolic Room, set up, by the Hollywood and Vine, but it was raining. So we set up in like the little cave where like the Pantages was. And then,
they used to have the Ticketmaster outlet right there.
Yeah. It used to be just like all these homeless people would sleep there. They didn't have any bars or anything. And then we just started playing like punk rock at like 6 in the morning. Yeah. We had the first band come on because that's when the first people came with a bicycle. And then, like the Hollywood Independent, people were writing letters like Holocaust of Noise. And then, like the wrestling band would be like challenging the runners saying that, not a real sport. Running is a real sport. Yeah, like Groovy Rednecks to be like passing out cigarettes to the people that are running by. So they didn't have us back. So hopefully, we don't do anything that keeps us from coming back, but we do something that gets us to come back.
Yeah, man.
But here's the music we've been waiting for.
Cool, dude. All right. Well, you know what? We are going to play one of the bands that I'm kind of looking forward to. Saccharine Trust, I always love that band, and we're going to hear a song for them, and we'll be back on the More Music Radio Pod. All right.
Hi, this is Jim Schrader. You're listening to the More Music Radio Program on skinbro.la.
or the funnies when the news of the untimely death of an inspiration, the great one, to many who saw through those eyes, staring down at me, catching eulogies, took me. But I did not weep, I did not weep. Caught the buses I do every day of the week. Even the lesser known of us died. Feeling less alone, I consoled myself. Then, the great one, said the person in the next seat, is dead, dead, died while asleep. What will happen? What will happen next? I pretended not to speak the language. And mine is a girl in back of me crying sweet tender. Tears I could not erase, she thought me a stranger. It was the great one they loved. No one else could earn her trust. But the great one is dead. The great one is dead. The great one is dead. The great one. Marticians, readjust bids, aging biographers send rough drafts, tortured missionaries send their regrets for the late one. Religious arguments on the take converge, moments of silence in haste or absurd, officials negotiate price, while sculpturers practice on Christ. Dogs awake in the dark, cry. Where in the stars is the great one's name written? Private scribes make final entries. Voices a horse in eulogy. Ex-spouses ill thought of by lords also dug up in divinity in the debris. World leaders who warn hunger on the back burner and negotiate for positions as power. The great one is dead. 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 Yeah, the great one is dead. The great one is dead. The great one is dead. Like that. The great one is dead. The great one is dead. The great one is dead. The great one.
Hi, this is James Quall, and you are listening to the More Music Radio Pod. On skidrow.la.
All right. Welcome back to the More Music Radio Pod. We are here with Dave Travis.
Yep. And we're here with Vince Ocampo.
Yeah. And so, we are at the end of the show, man.
Okay.
We got
so
a couple minutes left in the show.
Girls, I guess I'm not teaching school anymore, but yeah, you really should come down to the Bloom Fest this Saturday, next week from Saturday, July 21st. It's free. If you're coming from any place that's near a metro, it's really advised to take the train down there.
Expecting yeah, like about the Gold Line, I think, the line Tokyo, little Tokyo, the Little Tokyo exit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, they're expecting possibly up to, like, 25,000 people, so unless you want to be fighting with them for a place to park.
Yeah.
It'd be...
Keep talking. It's all right. We're going to try to get Arlo at the tail end of the show right now. We have 2 minutes left on the More Music Radio Pod. We're trying to call Arlo right now. Hopefully he picks up. Hopefully he's not getting down with his lady. You know what I mean? I hate calling people and then they're getting down with their ladies, you know? Is it working? It's not ringing.
Yeah, I dialed it.
Hmm. Oh, wait, well.
Meanwhile, so it's free. And then I got the internet TV station because, mm-hmm. like, I saw the Mormons, Mike Watts, Stench Radio, all these people are doing like radio stations.
Right.
I thought, why not do a TV station?
And UHF.TV.
So I got UHF.TV.
Hell yeah, man.
The GoDaddy, the domain was open, so I got it. So I'm just starting to put my videos up there because...
How many videos you got up there right now?
I got 10 episodes so far. I got 50 videos of just bands and I cut into 10 episodes.
Uh-huh.
Trying to do an episode. I'm kind of like on the Mike Watt plan of not having a regular schedule, just getting it up as much as I can.
Yeah.
But I got 10 episodes so far. The next episode is going to be the preview episode of all the bands from the festival.
Right.
That should be going up hopefully by Monday. Then I'll be filming the festival. That'll be the next episode after that. Then Pay Me Love Circus is coming to town. So they're like the reunion for that.
Mm-hmm. Be that keep going. It's okay.
After that.
Just ignore the dial tone.
And then Dave Markey.
You want to call him or Jordan should I drop Schwartz. It?
Hello. Oh, Arlo. Oh, Arlo. You there? Fuck, we just got... We had
Drop
Arlo on the phone.
Call, man.
God damn it. We got 30 seconds left, too. Okay.
So
God go damn.
www.
Sorry, Arlo. We'll get you we'll get you on next time, man.
www.uhf.tv. You know, it's the bands, a lot of bands that don't get heard but need to be. It's an educational thing. I mean, you got bigger bands.
Mm-hmm.
I actually got, like, Jim Carroll up there. And, just www.uhftv. And then Saturday, July 21st, come down to Bloomfest.
The Bloom Stage.
Bloom Stage.
And thanks a lot, Dave.
Fourth and Hewitt. In
thanks, Dave.
Los
Have
Angeles,
a good one, man.
013.
That's it.
Okay. It automatically cuts off. Okay. All right.
Hello?
Is anybody there on the phone? Hello, are you there on the phone?
Can you hear me?
Hello. You're the
bueno.
The More Music Radio Pod is over right now.
I know it is, but I want to ask you something.
What's up? Is this Esmeralda?
Yeah, I just got out of jail, dude.
You just, why didn't you, oh man, you should have got out of jail earlier. The show's over. Is this going live right now, Nick?
I was on hold forever.
It is?
Yeah.
Yeah,
is
I was
it
on
recording?
Hold forever.
It's about to end the